Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
McKinnon and O'Reilly off the opening faceoff underway here in Denver in round two. Carr gloves it down, had a tough time with it. O'Reilly scores! Ryan O'Reilly picks up where he left off in round one. Rantanen hit by Parayko, but Rantanen still on it, thrown to the net, loose puck, they score! It popped out for Nichushkin. Landeskog, as he's falling, made the pass. That shot, they score! Dan Girard got it through! Colorado has their first lead. Here's Kyrou right back in. Jordan Kyrou drags, scores! Jordan Kyrou ties it. Here's Manson. Girard, his shot tips, save Binnington. Rebound, he got that one too. Kadri had the follow-up, Binnington fell over. Here's Manson. Binnington's reset. Manson scores!
Celebrate deep into the night as the Avalanche grab game one. Shades of game two against Nashville when they had to battle. They dominated, but it wasn't getting rewarded on the scoreboard. But this team is made of something special. They kept the pressure on. They kept persevering, and they eventually busted through with Josh Manson. How many of you, when you were watching the game with buddies or texting and with your buddies, had your little overtime a pool of who is going to be the game winner, right? You know, we always would do that in the press box. Game goes into overtime. All right, who you got? Everybody would throw in a couple of bucks, and you get to pick a player. Who had Josh Manson in the overtime winner scoring pool? Chad Andrus in for Stink. Stink will be back tomorrow as we talk about this exciting game and how it went down and what won it for the Avs. And you know, there was so much made, Chad, about the layoff. Or is it gonna affect them in any way? And not that it was drastic, but in that first period, it looked like St. Louis was the team that had the jump. St. Louis was the team that was matching the Avs in skating, maybe even outskating them a little bit. I thought that first period, maybe you saw the effects before they truly got their legs underneath them. If you all you had to do was watch the first period and then watch the second period and how obvious it was that this team found their legs in the second period. Not that they were bad. You know, please don't take this the wrong way. They weren't bad in the first period. But for all the debate about the layoff, my feeling was always, hey, you always take all the time off you can because you're going to reap the long-term benefits. But I think for the first period, yeah, you know, I don't think they were as sharp as certainly they would end up being for the next 2.5 periods.
I think that's a little bit of hindsight because you saw what the second period looked like. Because as I'm making notes, as I'm watching the game, I didn't think they were bad. I didn't even think they were average in the first period. I thought they were good. I thought they had a lot of chances. They hit three posts. I thought they came out strong. And Binnington was able to hold up early. You know, St. Louis got the bounce that went right to O'Reilly on the first goal. But the free-flowing with no whistles going through that first period, I thought the Avalanche came out with plenty of jumping and had the Blues on their heels. And the three posts, especially right off the bat, right? I thought they came out with very minimal effect from the layoff and looked really good. I think you just then saw the second period where the ice was completely tilted in their favor. And then it makes you look like, okay, well, maybe it did take them a little bit of time to get up to speed. But they were certainly the better team in the first period from what I saw. But when you compare it to the second, yeah, there's a big difference there because if they bottle up what they did in the second period across all lines, nobody's beating them.
Thanks to our listeners in Aurora for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. It was a game full of heroes, but some unlikely heroes. You know, when you think about it, Josh Manson, who would have ever thought Manson would have scored the game winner? I thought Sammy Girard played his best playoff game ever as an Avalanche. And I feel good for Girard because he has been a easy target for Avalanche fans whenever you have frustrations with this team. And Girard's always been kind of the guy. Like if you've heard talk over the last couple of years, who's the most likely Avalanche player from their core to get traded? It's always been Girard, you know? So good to see him have a really good game last night.
And it's easy to say that after the goal, right, that gives them the lead in the second period. But even before that, and I even typed it in on my phone right before that, a big part of the reason the Avalanche just completely dominated that second period, I thought, were the shifts that Girard and Byram were giving them, because they were both playing really, really well, and it kept consistent, constant pressure in the blue zone no matter who was out there on the ice. I thought both of those guys were exceptional in that second period when the Avs really dominated the game.
I loved also, because playoff hockey, you know, sometimes the goals are beautiful. Like the move that if you were watching the Florida-Tampa game, I think it was the move that Kucherov put on where he totally, you talk about breaking ankles, totally left the Florida defenseman gasping for air and then made the little pass across. Beautiful tic-tac goal. But what I loved about the Avalanche goals yesterday, especially the first one, you got MacKinnon. MacKinnon wins a faceoff. Puck goes into the corner. There's Rantanen winning his one-on-one battle in the corner, throwing the puck out front. Who's there in front creating a screen? It's MacKinnon. Puck comes out for the rebound. Easy put in for Nichushkin. It's that kind of work and sacrifice and grit that when you got your best players, your superstars, making those kind of plays and that kind of effort, man, it's why there's no limit to what this team could do.
I will add Landeskog into that mix because he was everywhere all night.
And right there everywhere. And right there in front on the game winner, too. Fantastic. All right, we're getting your reaction to it. And Russell Wilson was at the game yesterday. What does he do? Does he go home? Does he just go from the Broncos facility to a game? A Nuggets game? A Rockies game? A hockey game? He's everywhere. He's Mr. Denver sports fan.
Be honest.
Quarterback.
If you had his life, you'd do exactly the same
Absolutely.
Thing. Good honey, on you, Russ.
Honey, sorry. Look, I'm going to the hockey game. You got everything here. Don't worry. You got it. I'm going to the hockey game. Go take a look at your Sports Illustrated swimsuit model there. Trevor. Hey, but you did awesome.
He's adopted the city and the community before he's ever played a game. That's great.
Yeah, but you know what? He's a sports fan, and he just comes from a place in Seattle that didn't have hockey until this year and doesn't have hoops. Hasn't had hoops for a long time. He's looking around going, this is great as a sports fan. Yes, Russ. Yes. You now know what we've known forever. Coming up, does this game change at all how you feel about the rest of the series? That's next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Like the feeling or the actual goal itself? Because in my dreams, I you know, like a one-hander or something like that, you know? But no, it was great. I mean, it's, like I said, it's not about the way I feel. It's the way the whole team feels, you know, seeing everybody come at me. That's the best part.
Josh Manson, sniper. He's the hero as his shot from the point got through. Great work in front by Gabe Landeskog. In fact, Manson crediting Landy for his game winner.
That whole shift was him. I mean, he kept getting the puck back in the corner. I think he hit me low to high in the first one, too, and I got a shot on net or whatever it was. And then he just kept working and worked it behind the net and got it out to me again. I mean, he kept bringing guys to him, and it opened up a lane up top for me to have so much time. So, I, you know, that's a play, I think, all on Landy tonight.
Landeskog's a beast. Just a beast. Man, you talk about a guy, you can just see how much he wants this. How much he desperate. You talk about the hunger that this Avalanche team has. Just train your eyes on Gabe Landeskog whenever he's out there and just watch the stuff he's doing.
Won 5 faceoffs last night, played 21 minutes, had 2 points, and he was constantly involved in the play. It's year 11 for Landy, and as McKinnon has made well known to everybody, we haven't won anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
This team coming in as fresh as they were with 8 days off and, even Kemper 10 or 10 plus days off. If they only played once a week, I'm telling you, Mike, I don't know if anybody would beat them. to have that kind of fresh legs and that kind of a jump. I don't think the rest of the series is going to look like that, by the way. It would be nice if it did.
All right, so how does this game and the way that it was played, does this change at all how you think the rest of the series goes?
It could. I'm still going to stick with my original prediction of Avs in 6.
Okay.
But if they play a period and a half in game 2, the same way they played the second period, then it could be 5 or potentially even spiral into a sweep. I don't know that that's going to happen again without the long layoff and the rest and the fresh legs. And I think it's going to even out a little bit more in terms of just the speed of the game, puck control. I think St. Louis will adjust. And then obviously when they go home and can get the matchups they want with the line changes, it'll be a little bit different. And I do think the Avs will finally taste defeat in this series at least once. I'll stick to the 6 games. So they still might lose 2 games. But, man, when you watch that second period last night, you see what the difference can be between them and not just St. Louis, but them and anybody else. And you can see how it could get out of control, but for now, I'll still stay with as in 6.
Looking ahead to game 2, well, clearly we're enjoying game 1, but just a quick look ahead to game 2, this is all about St. Louis for me because the Avalanche aren't going to change. The Avalanche aren't going to all of a sudden get cocky. They're not all of a sudden going to get complacent. They're not all of a sudden going to come out flat. Sorry, you got a bunch of Terminators out there that are just, they're on a mission. Forget about finding John Connor. They're on a mission to win the cup, and they're not going to be denied. So they're going to continue to be consistent. What we're going to learn so much about St. Louis. We're going to learn. We're going to learn if St. Louis is made of something special. We're going to learn about if, they're celebrated depth and they're 9 goal scorers with more than 20 goals. And, Bennington's got his name on a Stanley Cup and he gave evidence of what he could do in game 1. Watch him do even more in game 2. We're going to learn about St. Louis. And if this is going to be a 6-game series or a 7-game series, or if the Blues are going to win, as Scott Masters, who was on with me in our pregame show yesterday, predicted that the Blues in 7, or Wayne Gretzky picked the Blues to win. Anybody who thinks the Blues are going to win or extend this series to 6 or 7 games, tomorrow's the night. Tomorrow's the night, because if the Avs win tomorrow night to go up 2-0, I just don't see the Avs 6-0 in the playoffs losing 2 in a row in St. Louis. I just don't. I at the minimum. Nope. Fever, you're not going to do that. At the most, they come away. At the worst, they come away with a split, and then they come home 3-1, and you're looking at them closing it out. So we're going to learn about St. Louis. To me, tomorrow's about St. Louis. I know what I'm going to get from the Avs. I have no worries about that. Let's see what the Blues are made of.
54.
Let's see what they're made of.
54-25 shots. Last night, shots on goal. If it stays more than 2-1, like, it's over. There's no chance.
Let's say they attempted like another 30 or 40 shots. They had like 90 shots.
Yeah. I mean, they were missing wide a lot.
Yeah.
In addition to the 5 posts. I don't know how much the Blues are able to close that gap, but it needs to close significantly. I'm not saying they need to outshoot the Avalanche, but if the Avalanche are going to get 50 shots, legitimate chances, then the Blues are not going to win. So they're going to have to muck up the game a lot more than they did last night They're going to have to slow things down because you give the Avs that many chances, you're not going to beat this team.
Easier said than done, right? Easier said than done. Coming up at 8:30, 1 hour from now, the great Sandy Clough, who was on last night, immediately following the game, he'll join us, give his thoughts on what we saw. We'll have Four Down Territory coming up, which this time of year we're making four down whatever we want. We'll focus on what we got from the Avalanche last night. We'll hear from Jared Bednar, Gabe Landeskog, and Josh Manson.
Professional football in America is a special game.
This is Four Down Territory.
I'd like to start out with a thank you to John Elway.
That just happened.
Right, I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have. I'm not saying I haven't.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
On Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for.
First down.
That whole shift was him. I mean, he kept getting the puck back in the corner. I think he hit me low to high in the first one, too, and I got a shot on net or whatever it was. And then he just kept working and worked it behind the net and got it out to me again. I mean, he kept bringing guys to him, and it opened up the lane up top for me to have so much time. So, that's a play, I think, all on landing tonight.
Four down territory devoted to the Avalanche thrilling overtime win last night. As we hear from the heroes, Chad Anderson for Stink. Stink back tomorrow after his family trip to Alaska. And Do you find yourself as a hockey fan, as a sports fan, watching games like last night and marveling at the mental and physical toughness it takes to keep pushing when you're not getting rewarded like the Avalanche were? There isn't another sport around where, as a team, you dominate so much and it doesn't show up on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
and yet they just keep coming.
I said earlier, it's the football equivalent of having 500 yards of offense and going to overtime with a team who has 150 or 175. And I think last night was a good reminder of just what it takes, not just to win the cup, but to win any single game in the Stanley Cup playoffs. There are so many things that you have to be completely dialed in on. Mm-hmm. The Avalanche made one glaring mistake last night, and it cost them a goal, and it sent the game to overtime, right? I mean, it is being completely buttoned up and going that hard, that aggressive, mistake-free for 60 minutes or 60 minutes plus every single playoff game. So credit to the Avalanche for sticking with it. What they were doing was working, and they finally got rewarded.
But game of inches, right? But we say it, we throw it out there so flippantly as, oh, hey, sports, a game of inches, right? But think about it, they had five posts.
And they whiffed on at least two or three other really good wide open chances.
Couple inches here and there.
Yeah, a couple of inches, and it's a 7-2 game.
Six to one game. Couple more inches. Story of my life. Next in four down territory.
Second down.
I came around the net and used a load of high, and I saw Mans had a nice pump fake up top first that he doesn't get a whole lot of credit for, but that was real nice. And, kind of got there forward to bite, was able to get a shooting lane. And at that point, I'm just trying to stand in front and kind of move out last second.
Yeah, that's the underrated part of what Josh Manson did. We think of Josh Manson. Remember how he was sold to us when the Avalanche made that move? Hey, good physical defenseman. Will add some of that much-needed toughness that was missing in the series against Vegas a year ago. But, hey, that took some offensive skill at that moment to realize, hey, look at the situation. No, I don't have to shoot it right away. Settle the puck down. Wait for a shooting lane to open. It is a real skill. This isn't just defensemen back there just randomly firing pucks. A lot of shots get blocked. The more you watch playoff hockey, you realize a lot of shots from the point get blocked. And there is a skill to be able to get a shot through. And him being able to take that half a second, wait, let that lane open, let Landeskog get set up in front of the goal like that to provide a screen. Bennington never sees it. We all go home happy.
31 shifts for Manson last night. I thought he played really well, aside from the overtime goal. So kudos to Joe Sakic. Tip of the cap for that acquisition. But also, we say this a lot when it comes to championship rounds in sports, or especially players who have been in championship rounds and are trying to get back, about their experience and the way they view and see the game and the situation. But that comment even though he hasn't been to a Stanley Cup final, doesn't it just give off the vibe of Landeskog, especially the way he's playing, is the wise old veteran who knows all and sees all that's going on everywhere on the ice, every shift, right? Doesn't that comment reflect the seasoned championship veteran that Landeskog, I think, will prove to be when they hoist the cup?
Yeah, he's not there yet, but boy, it sure feels like it. He's got the look of it, doesn't he? A lot of abs do. Next on Four Down Territory.
Third down.
I mean, you need your depth and you need everyone playing, especially when you're playing a team like St. Louis with all the depth that they have. But, you know, they were on for the one goal, and I thought they played great. They were dangerous. They defended hard. They did everything right. And, you know, when you're talking about your stars need to drive the bus, it's not just getting on the score sheet every night. Like, that, they're playing against a really good line, the MacKinnon line in O'Reilly, and sometimes a wash is good enough.
Jared Bednar's depth was on display. I'll tell you what else was on display. And we talked about this yesterday in handicapping this series, and the point I kept making was the Avalanche have a big advantage on defense. Their defensemen are healthy. Their defensemen are offensive-minded. And they've shown to be even better defensively. Guys like Cale Makar. Sammy Girard had a couple moments defensively, but overall he had a really good game. Eric Johnson. By the way, Eric Johnson wasn't around last year. You see the big impact he makes. But my thought going in was St. Louis, for all their depth, everybody talked about their depth, and it's justified, but boy, they are weakened right now on defense, and I thought that showed up. Avalanche defensemen outshot their St. Louis counterparts on the blue line 25-10. They got two goals. They got an assist, including the game winner. Big, big, big-time advantage for the Avalanche on the blue line.
I think the play of Girard and Byram in particular, and in that second period when the ice was so tilted, made a huge difference in the flow and the feel of that game, because keeping St. Louis off of the power play for one, but then not getting beat up by their third and fourth lines where they have so much depth and they have 920 goal scorers to hold them in check and not just play them even, but kind of dominate across the board with every line on the ice and every pairing on the ice. It was enormous. And the second period was a large part of that.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Carr gloves it down, had a tough time with it. O'Reilly scores!
Yeah. We'll give you that one. Only as a way to ask the question, you're St. Louis. You got a stand on his head performance from Jordan Binnington. You had the lead after the first period, but you end up losing the game in overtime. What are they telling themselves today? Their off day, in between games. What are they telling themselves? What are they going to hang their hat on for game two?
I mean, their goaltender played pretty well to make that many saves. I don't think he was spectacular, but he played well while the Avs were just a bit off hitting posts and shooting wide. It's a tough sell for me, to be honest with you, because they got dominated in faceoffs, and O'Reilly had to take 28 of them, and Thomas had to take 15, and they have nobody else that can take faceoffs against the Avalanche, who have basically everybody, and those two guys just got completely wiped out for the most part. So when you can't win faceoffs, you can't control the puck, and you're down defensemen and you're facing constant pressure from every Avalanche line, like, they've got to muck up the game, but I don't know how you're going
to
do that.
Right? That is, it sounds so easy, right? Hey, let's just clog up the ice. Let's lean on them a little bit.
Well, I mean, the Avalanche had one power play chance or two? Two power play chances?
Two power play chances.
Okay. Are they going to have more?
By the way, the Avalanche out-hit St. Louis, too. For all the skating and puck possession and shots on goal and all that stuff, they still out-hit them, too. They were the more physical team. That'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the Avalanche, big win over the Blues, and looking ahead to game two, looking back on game one, and we look forward to that. So we look forward to giving you a chance to weigh in. It's kind of like the day after a Broncos game, giving you a chance to weigh in. Ramoslav.com text line 303-713-1043. I want to go back to Josh Manson, because this guy's a really, really easy guy to like. And in he made some self-deprecating comments the other day that look really kind of funny in the light of what happened last night. Explain that.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
That whole shift was him. I mean, he kept getting the puck back in the corner. I think he hit me low to high in the first one, too, and I got a shot on net or whatever it was. And then he just kept working and worked it behind the net and got it out to me again. I mean, he kept bringing guys to him, and it opened up the lane up top for me to have so much time. So, that's a play, I think, all on Monday tonight.
Josh Manson. As I'm watching Josh Manson score the game winner and looking at the highlights and looking how composed he was on that play and how he waited a half a tick to get that shooting lane, get the puck through. I'm thinking back to some comments, Chad Anderson for Stink, who's back tomorrow, that he made earlier this week. And Manson's a good dude. You can see why he fits in so well in the room, right? You could just say, and he was mic'd up during the game as well. And usually the guys that are agreed to be mic'd up during games, they're the fun ones. They're the ones that people like to be around, and TV likes them and media likes them and all that. So, but earlier this week, he was talking about Cale Makar, and I found it really interesting. First of all, from the standpoint of he was saying, hey, look, when I came up, it's not like he's a lot older than Makar, but he said, when I came up, skill development for players like me was like, hey, go out and play. Now for guys like Makar, even though they're defensemen, they're working on all these drills, and it makes these guys who are just defensemen the weapons that guys like Cale Makar are. And it signals that we're probably looking at a brand new wave of defensemen coming into the league. I'm not saying they're going to be as good as Cale Makar, but they're going to be stylistically like Makar and less like Josh Manson. You're going to see less Josh Mansons moving forward in the NHL than you see Cale Makar types. And yet, so here's this guy going on and on about, oh, man, I'm in awe of Cale Makar's skills and everything like that. But yet on this night, a really fun irony, he was the guy making the really skilled play back there on the blue line.
Yeah, and the patience to just kind of let it sit
and
develop.
And the accuracy and everything, yeah.
And fire it through. He had really good shifts throughout the night, and he had a lot of them. He was out there a lot last night. And I thought he played really well, even without the goal going in overtime. So tip of the cap to Joe Sakic on that acquisition and identifying that need for the Avalanche. There's really not a lot to nitpick about last night's game. And this is why when we went back and forth with the confidence versus cockiness discussion yesterday, that everyone should feel really confident if you're backing the Avs, if you're in this community going forward, because the talent, especially with rest like that, it was overwhelming. And we disagree a little bit about the first period, about how they started. I thought they started with really good jump and had a lot of chances and hit three posts. And, you were pointing more towards the second period where it was just all downhill. For the Avalanche last night. But honestly, outside of maybe a little bit of the rust in terms of hitting the post five times and putting just a lot of shots wide of the net, I mean, it seemed like there were 15 shots. They're like, why is that off that far? At least that many. Outside of that, I mean, if you're looking for problems with last night's game or with this team, you are really, really stretching and nitpicking because they dominated. That is as dominant as a team can look in an overtime playoff game.
Yeah. At times I had to remind myself, we're in overtime. Or throughout the third period, this is a one-goal game. I had to remind myself because it was such domination. And yet all it took was one bad change and pucks in the back of the net. And St. Louis scores to tie it up 2-2. And you're sitting there going, but even then, I know that overtime hockey is so scary. It really is. It's what makes the sport so exhilarating. There's nothing, and I mean it, there is nothing like playoff hockey, overtime hockey, in that every time the puck's in your team's zone, you're holding your breath until the puck comes back out. But, and there's so many random things that can happen in overtime, but I just, the Avalanche level, it was the same way when they were in game two against Nashville. Their level of dominance was such that even in an overtime game where, in theory, anything can happen, I felt overwhelmingly good about the likelihood, the inevitability that they were going to score and win.
We're getting a lot of comments on the text line, and I want to see how you feel about this, because I'm disagreeing quite a bit with a lot of the texters. What did you think about Binnington last night? Because there's a lot of people who are saying he's in a zone and he was awesome. And I was like, nah. I thought the Avalanche just whiffed, missed a lot. Like, I mean, he had saves and he had some good saves, but I don't look at him like I would look at someone like, you know, Vasilevsky in the last, you know, 5 or 6 elimination games Tampa has played when he's had 5 shutouts and given up 1 goal in the 6 games. Like, he's not like that. I mean, he played fine, but I don't look at it, his performance last night, as something like it's going to be a problem throughout the series.
No, the Avalanche should have comfortably scored 6 goals last night. The odds of a team hitting 5 posts, crossbars, posts, 5 times, come on. That doesn't happen. Most
inconceivable.
Most comment on the broadcast, they got to get the red paint out in between.
Right.
Periods.
I mean, ting, ting, ting. It's just like, okay, so most nights you don't hit 5 posts, 2 of them go in. You got, at one point, Darren Pang is like, wow, the Avalanche are missing the net a lot tonight. They had a sequence early on in the second period, a 2-on-1. Mikko Rantanen coming down the left slot, just missed the net. You know, that Kadri I thought Kadri had a really good game from the standpoint that he was all over the place. He was very active. You could see how active, but he missed a lot of shots. So
Johnson whiffed on that great pass from Byram.
Exactly. Now, Binnington went full extension, and I give him credit for that, but if Johnson gets anywhere near full wood on that, it's a goal. So, yeah, I'm a little bit reluctant to say, oh, wow, he stood on his head. He was really good. He was good. He was really good. But to say he was, you know, sublime or something, like he was very lucky, 5 posts, and he was also fortunate that the Avalanche, and this is what makes the Avalanche so scary, is that they put 54 shots on goal. 54 shots on goal, and I think to a man, a lot of them were like, I didn't shoot the puck particularly well tonight. We could have shot the puck a lot better tonight. That's scary. So, yeah, he was good, but
he had those 2 saves back to back on MacKinnon where he stoned him right in front. You know, I thought that was solid. And the play you talked about, diving when Johnson whiffed, that was the big highlight for him. But you know, Lehkonen had plenty of chances in front. I don't look at what Binnington did last night and say, well, that's a problem going forward. If the Avalanche are going to get 50 shots, they're going to score more than 2 goals in regulation regularly. They're going to score 4 or 5.
It was like Connor Ingram for Nashville in game 2. And the commentary for Nashville from their side was, well, hey, we lost the game. Now we got a goaltender that we can trust. And we got a goaltender who might be climbing into the Avs' heads. Okay. That was clearly not the case. Hey, I'll tell you what. If Binnington goes out in game 2 tomorrow night, puts up another 50 saves, 40 saves, 45 saves, and at some point you get the sense that the Avalanche are starting to kind of press, kind of starting to mutter to themselves, trying to be so fine with their shots to beat them, then I'll start to talk about Binnington being. But I got to see a lot more from Binnington before I see evidence that he's climbed into their heads. All I saw last night was an Avalanche team was, all right, go ahead, make a couple really good saves. Go ahead, sprawl around. We're not going to stop. We're going to keep coming, and we know we're going to eventually beat you.
I'm really anxious to see the adjustments St. Louis attempts tomorrow
yeah.
night.
Yeah, I'd like to know what that is.
To muck up the game and try to keep themselves in it again, because I think you're right. Tomorrow is the key for the Blues to make this a big series and extend it. I have a little bit of a theory. It's been profitable for me, let's just say that, with Denver teams. And it goes back to when Barry Bonds would always sit out the last game of the series at Coors Field because he said he couldn't ever recover from leaving the elevation and going to the next town. And he would always have a bad series after leaving Denver, right? So with the Nuggets and with the Avalanche, especially in playoff series, if they have home ice or home court and then they go to a game three after a team has been here for 4 or 5 days and go back home, yes, the Blues will get the combinations they want because they'll have the line change advantage and they'll have the home crowd behind them, and that's big. It can't be discounted. But I also think coming off of playing here, if the Avalanche can get that kind of pressure on St. Louis and keep the puck in their zone in game two, similar or anything close to what they did last night, St. Louis is going to be so fatigued when they go home into that environment for game three that there's an opportunity there. So I think you're right that they need to really make a stand and figure something out in game two, because I already like the Avalanche's chances in their first game in St. Louis just because of the travel factor that is unique to leaving the elevation here and going to play there.
Some reaction on the text line. Ryan in Missouri, last night was not dominating. When you have to squeak out a win in overtime, that's not dominating. Potentially losing any game is not dominating. Ryan, dude, I don't know what to tell you. You're
what?
You're a good texter. You're a good listener. You're a loyal listener. We appreciate it. But the Avalanche dominated that game. Now, that's the beauty of hockey. You can dominate a hockey game and not necessarily still win it. But the Avalanche dominated that game yesterday. Can we be clear? We're in agreement?
No.
They
question.
Dominated the game.
No question.
That's the beauty of hockey, though. You can dominate a game and still find yourself in it. You guys are idiots. Without Binnington making those saves, the Avs win 8-1. I would argue that you don't see five clanged posts in a game. Usually, a couple of those go in. Take into account some other shots that the Avalanche just missed the net. Yeah, it should have been 5-1, 6-1, and it had nothing to do with anything Binnington was doing. It was just the Avalanche with some bad luck and a little misfired shooting. But no, I'm not. This texter gets it. Binnington by no means stood on his head. He was lucky most of the night. What about our goalie? You know what? We haven't talked about Darcy Kuemper today. And not that he was asked to do a ton, but much like in the Nashville series, Chad, whenever he had to make some big saves, and he did. There were a couple sequences there where he had to make some big saves. He was there, and most importantly, I think he put to rest whatever concerns we may have had about any lingering effects, maybe mental more than physical, coming off getting poked in the eye.
Best case scenario, I think, last night, because he just did not face anywhere near the type of pressure that Binnington did on the other end, right? The puck was in the other zone most of the night. And for Kuemper to come back after the longest layoff, 10-plus days, in his situation and returning from an injury, right, I think you got everything you could ask for from him last night. If he holds St. Louis to 2 goals a game or 2 goals on 25 shots, then I don't know that the Blues can win a game if they're only getting 2. So, yeah, He did what was, I think, expected of him. You know, I don't think he was called upon to do anything that was extraordinary or fabulous, and that's exactly the way you want it. You don't want your goalie to have to save your bacon, and they made sure that he didn't have to do that last night.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.